Hello and welcome to the Eclipsing History Podcast, a podcast where we explore the history of eclipses through the diverse cultures of North America.
This is episode 2, Eclipses and Power. You can find the entire series and additional information at bgsu.edu/eclipsinghistory.
Welcome to episode 2, Eclipses and Power. Previously on Eclipsing History, we covered the 1806 eclipse and Tecumseh.
More than a decade before Tecumseh's eclipse in 1806, in 1794, General Mad Anthony Wayne marched into Northwest Ohio at the head of an army, the newly formed American Legion, intent on crushing the last remnants of resistance from the native tribes of the region and conquering it for the United States. On the other side, determined native war bands under the leadership of Chief Blue Jacket marched to meet them in a climactic battle to defend their homes. The Battle of Fallen Timbers shaped the region forever. The battle wasn't just a clash of armies, however. An eclipse impacted the strategies of both sides and played a serious role for the United States forces. Let's hear from Joseph Catalano, professor from Clemson University.
The Shawnee observers of their culture noted that they seem to have interpreted eclipses as some sort of precursor to war. And if we think about this, this kind of makes sense. If you think about what a lunar eclipse looks like, the moon sort of turns a reddish hue, sort of a traditional symbol of war, conflict, or blood. For other nations, they sometimes interpreted this differently. There's an example of a military campaign that indigenous coalition is putting together, and the members from the Odawa Nation witnessed an eclipse, and they interpret it as a bad omen, and they leave and sort of abandon this campaign.
For both sides, the eclipse would impact how they fought the battle and shift the fate of the region forever. The eclipse was an important spiritual event for Native forces as they began their traditional rituals in response. Outnumbered, weakened from ritual fasting and the arduous journey, and psychologically and spiritually wounded by the eclipse, General Anthony Wayne was able to sweep Blue Jacket's forces from the field, effectively ending organized Native resistance to the U.S. until the War of 1812, when Tecumseh would seek to unite the tribes in defense. Today, eclipses in Western culture are considered little more than a public curiosity. News networks mention them in passing, vendors sell memorabilia, and the public considers them a social affair, an excuse to party and be with friends and family, rather than a fate-changing astronomical event. Astronomers and eclipse chasers follow the trail of eclipses purely in the pursuit of scientific advancement and keeping a detailed astronomical record. However, some still keep the old traditions alive, and emphasize the importance of an eclipse as part of their community's world. While the importance of eclipses in mainstream society and those who view them as culturally significant have been marginalized, as recently as 100 years ago, eclipses held immense psychological, political, and social significance. Interpretations of eclipses were used to build power all over the world. Expressions of eclipses in culture is how eclipses helped build and solidify hierarchies. Priests, leaders, and persons in positions of power used eclipses to justify their goals, rally people to their cause, or to upset the current status quo. In the modern world, derivations of power from eclipses, as well as the way humans construct hierarchies based on interpretations of eclipses, use this phenomenon as a means to justify their goals. Whatever the use, eclipses have been a means to project power for millennia. To comprehend the power inherent in eclipses and astronomical events, we need to understand the context of eclipses both scientifically and culturally.
Picture yourself standing under a clear sky with the stars overhead, sparkling like a dazzling mosaic of fire gems on the dark velvet of the night. For a very long time, the noble science of stargazing, astronomy, has led the way in the pursuit of human curiosity. Stars were not just points of light throughout the early period of civilization. They were also celestial guides for both farmers and seamen. They drew routes over the boundless seas, indicated the seasons, and predicted floods. After thousands of years stargazing, we reach a point in time that captures the imagination of nascent nation. David Byron vividly depicts this still in American Eclipse, which transports us to the year 1878. Eclipse mania swept the country, an astronomical phenomenon that thrust the US to the forefront of scientific exploration. One goal brought astronomers and scientists together as they ventured into the vast American West to witness the moon's shadow when it completely obscured the sun. However, this was no typical scientific endeavor. There is more to this story of the 1878 eclipse than merely the position of the stars. It is about a nation's search for its identity and its people's insatiable curiosity. True Barons Act, a scene where people's goals and aspirations come together under the moon's shadow, is brought to light. Barons' detailed account of a single celestial occurrence shows the true beauty of astronomy as a subject. This science turns out to be much more than just intellectual. It's a huge human narrative interspersed with moments of wonders and amazement. It is an account of our role in the universe, one that is characterized by curiosity and never-ending quests for knowledge. Indeed, the history of astronomy is heavily dense, resounding through the ages with tales of wonders, curiosity, and amazement. It serves as a reminder of the amazing discoveries that can be made where we take the time to gaze up at the night sky. The fundamental story of human striving is embodied by astronomy. It symbolizes our never-ending quest to understand the universe, from prehistoric techniques of celestial navigation to the community's aspiration during the Great American Eclipse. It validates the idea that seeking information is an essential component of who we are as people, not just a feature of our nature. Let it serve as a reminder that there is still much work to be done in our quest to comprehend the stars. It is an endeavor as infinite as the cosmos itself, reaching far into the future.
Eclipse science itself is a core piece of astronomical practice. Modern eclipse predictions are based on a series of complex mathematical calculations based on astronomical observations and recognition of orbital patterns. However, 21st century astronomical methodology for predicting eclipses is just that, 21st century. Alternative historical methods of predicting eclipses made use of the resources different people around the globe had at their disposal, leading to ingenious means of crafting a prediction from solar observations. Native Americans had their own give-and-take relationship with the stars. Rather than a one-sided relationship of religious reverence for the sun and moon, Native people also crafted means of interacting with them, cultivating their own methods of eclipse science. Across the country, there are cases of Native American structures, usually earthworks, whose purpose was to understand the stars for both religious and practical purposes. These mounds and the purpose and culture surrounding them have become known as the Hopewell. One of the most intriguing examples of pre-Columbian Hopewell astronomy lies right here in Ohio, just to the east of Columbus in the community of Newark.
I've looked into the earthworks in Ohio, and a lot of them are built in alignment with the 18.6-year cycle of the moon, which is a cycle you need to understand to be able to start to think about when eclipses might occur, when the paths of these objects might cross in the sky. And, you know, if you think about how much earth they had to move to build these things, like some of the earthworks in Newark, Ohio, some of these walls are 15 feet high, 40 feet wide, and 500 feet long, and there's a lot of them. That's a lot of baskets you got to weave and a lot of soil you have to move. But if somebody said there was the skies were going to darken at such and such a point between sunrise and midday, and that's not part of anybody's experience, and it's also involving what they might consider an important deity in their society. If that actually happens, you don't question people like that. You start weaving baskets and moving dirt.
This give-and-take relationship between Native peoples exemplifies an understudied dimension of Native knowledge, and it's important to comprehend the authority these tribes had over their understanding of not only the sun and moon, but the wider world around them. Early European settlers took Native astronomical knowledge seriously and did compile their beliefs for future reference.
If you look at some of the earliest records of interactions between Europeans when they come to the shores here and the First Nations, well, it's interesting. It's not what one would expect. Sure, there were idiots. There's always going to be idiots on the boat with you. Frequently, the Europeans would treat the First Nations people they met with respect, and they would note, well, these people do X better than we do, or they have a technological way of doing something which is really good. And so you get these in things like the Jesuit relations, just about how their missions were going. And there's a lot of really interesting, there's scientific information in there, there's social information in there. And they would report the views of the First Nations about the various celestial phenomena.
However, by the late 18th and early 19th century, attitudes regarding native astronomical knowledge began to shift.
You get to the 18th century, things, I mean, there's still that attitude, but things start to change. But it's really in the 19th century that you get this sort of Western cultural attitude of superiority. Well, we have modern science. We have modern technology. These people don't. Here's what they think. Aren't they ignorant? Find that in the 19th century.
The shift in North American understandings of eclipses from native understandings to a more European-centric methodology can be interpreted as a part of the wider power shift on the continent stemming from colonization. Effectively, the implementation of European astronomical standards, and more so the repression of native understandings of astronomy, is representative of wider tides of colonization and globalization sweeping across the Americas throughout the 18th and 19th century. Perceived ignorance of astronomy was itself a weapon of power for scientists and mainstream society throughout the Victorian and Edwardian ages. Descriptions of sun darkenings, both past and contemporary, show the contempt for non-Western interpretations, while medieval tales of eclipses described the observers and interpretations as romantic, heroic, or mysterious. Non-European tales are looked on not nearly as favorably. In the U.S., one 1900 news article from Virginia, which was reprinted in Ohio, described the supposed panic the colored population had at a recent eclipse, taking a mocking tone at their perceived ignorance and superstition. One 1896 article from the Cincinnati-based newspaper, The Universalist, almost exclusively focuses on the travels of eclipse-chasing scientists around the world, framing the journey more like a travel adventure to parts unknown than a scientific or culturally significant venture. Frankly, you'd be hard-pressed to find a news publication from the 19th or 20th centuries that doesn't extol the virtues of Euro-American scientists and does not denigrate other interpretations. The study of eclipses are not simply the study of the eclipse itself or of astronomy. It is a manifestation of social power. Who has control over the overarching narrative? Whose interpretation is important and whose is a laughingstock?
Imagine you're living prior to the scientific explanation of eclipses. And one day, the sun just disappears, fully covered by the moon. So in the middle of the day, all of the daylight is gone.
That would definitely be terrifying.
Yeah, right? And what do humans do when they're scared? They create explanations through faith and worship to alleviate some of that fear. And because of this, there are many stories about the sun and the moon and their relationship with each other. While power dynamics are seen in many external ways, within the nations themselves, there were power dynamics about their own beliefs.
So faith creates these power dynamics?
Right. So to many tribal nations, the sun and the moon were deities. For example, the Comanche saw the moon as a semi-deity, while the Iroquois personified the moon and they prayed to it as if it was a mother and saw themselves as her earth children. The Cherokee believed that the moon was their creator and they worshipped it in that sense. And it doesn't just end there. Many indigenous nations all have similar beliefs about the worship of the moon.
Oh, what about the sun? Like, was that similar too?
Yeah, so many of the beliefs about the sun are in a similar fashion. So the Osage see the sun and the moon both as life symbols, the sun being a grandfather and the moon being a grandmother. This personification and relationship between the sun and the moon is very commonly seen in most indigenous beliefs. It can be easily understood that the sun and the moon were very powerful entities to these tribal nations.
So you can imagine that there did probably be strong reactions to the eclipse, considering how they personified them, right?
Exactly. So when two very symbolic life deities are afflicted by an eclipse, it would be very meaningful. The sun and the moon were in power, and these nations respected them by having specific rituals during the eclipse. The Miamia, or Miami, also had significance with the sun and the moon, but for differing reasons than the other nations discussed. The Miami worshipped the sun and the moon as a clock and a calendar. The sun helped them tell the time of the day, while the moon helped indicate months.
I guess that makes sense.
Right. So the tribal nations who upheld eclipse traditions still hold significance to indigenous peoples today. Talon Silverhorn also touched on Navajo traditions in our interview with him.
And then my wife is Navajo, and so she's never witnessed an eclipse, solar or lunar, because, well, you know, we do have things that we need to do when eclipses happen. It's not as strict as like Navajos, for example, who from the time the eclipse starts to the minute the eclipse ends, no matter where it's visible, they can't sleep, can't eat, can't, like, don't talk, don't go to the bathroom, don't work, can't be in the light, shut all the windows and everything, and just sit still quietly and, you know, let the sun and the moon have their time together. But, yeah, so very different traditions going on in our house when the eclipse rolls around.
To the Navajo, the eclipse of the sun is the death of the sun, and the sun is very weakened during that time. The Navajo stay inside, and they respect the sun's weakness. The Navajo beliefs in eclipses are also closely associated with life and death. The sun normally takes lives, but during an eclipse, it cannot. The Navajo believe that death by old age is a peaceful transition from life to death.
But not everyone dies of old age, so is there, like, a belief about that?
Right, so the Navajo believe that the death of a young person was their life being taken by the sun and the earth.
Oh, interesting.
Right, so this is one of the power dynamics that we see between the sun and the Navajo people. The Navajo respect the sun's power by staying inside and respecting it during its time of weakness. And during the eclipse, the sun does not take lives as a thank you for the respect that it was given.
That's a really, actually a really interesting faith dynamic. How did colonization affect?
As you can imagine, colonization took these beliefs from the tribal nations. The Miami, for example, they were separated in 1846, mostly moving to a reservation in Oklahoma, although some stayed in Ohio and Indiana. However, this separation contributed to a loss of culture. Unfortunately, many physical sources are lost and only oral traditions remain. George Ironstrack, a member of the Miami tribe of Oklahoma, touches on the loss of culture from colonialism.
The main thing is we don't have extant oral tradition around the community behaviors around the eclipse is to really help our students understand that, you know, our ancestors were, you know, in many ways, highly developed scientists about how they observed the sky. And, you know, when you go back and read the historical record, there's some unfortunate stuff in there, you know, basically Europeans saying these folks are savages. They see the eclipse as an ill omen, the end of the world, the end of their people, you know, all this sort of overdramatic interpretation of community behavior. And eclipses happened all the time. Our ancestors followed the moon very, very closely, and we have lots of sources about that. We don't have the sources for the eclipse, but the eclipses happened all the time. They happened regularly. And so our ancestors, in the way they were in terms of our own cultural science, we know they observed and followed these things and had stories about them. And for us as a people engaged in revitalization, some of what we have to do is create those stories anew because we don't have the old stories. But we want to begin with this place of recognizing, you know, when you're having this traumatic experience of observing a total eclipse, that this is something our ancestors watched many, many, many times. And they developed really complex systems for following the progress of the moon over generations. So we know they had complex systems for thinking and talking about this too. And we don't know what they were, but we all want to honor their complexity here in this moment where we're watching this amazing celestial event together.
To these tribal nations, the power dynamic between their nation and the sun and the moon was in sort of a harmony. There was a dynamic, but it was peacefully respected. Colonization took that harmony away.
So like Ironstrack mentioned, the colonists judged these beliefs, called them savages, and through colonialism, the beliefs were lost as the culture of the nation was erased.
Yeah, and then the power dynamic shifts to a negative one, with the colonists being in power over the First Nations. So, who was Blue Jacket? In the previous episode, we discussed Tecumseh, but what about the Shawnee leader who came before him?
Well, to answer that question, let's hear from Josh Catalano, the assistant professor in the Department of History at Clemson University. We heard from him earlier in this episode. He did a project about the significance of a lunar eclipse to the Shawnee people during the pivotal time of the Battle of Fallen Timbers in the late 1700s.
There was a lunar eclipse just a week before the famous Battle of Fallen Timbers. This is more significant when we think about sort of the minutia timeline in that this eclipse happens and a few days later they're anticipating the battle to actually take place. So the indigenous nations began doing ritual fasting. So they would often fast before war. Wayne may have known about this and purposely delayed his march, and in the process delayed the conflict a few days. So by the time he faces this coalition, they are likely may not have eaten or drank for several days. So he's fighting an already depleted force. They also interpreted some celestial and meteorological things going on. And there was a sort of prophecy that the Great Spirit might hide its face behind the clouds. And this would be a bad omen. The day of the battle, it rains. So when Wayne actually goes to fight this battle, he's fighting a force that's not just depleted physically, but also psychologically. So he had a strategic advantage at this battle that we often just sort of take for granted when we're thinking about military conflicts.
There's obviously a significance of not only solar eclipses to the Shawnee people, but also lunar eclipses.
Wait a minute. We haven't discussed lunar eclipses yet. What are they?
So, for those who don't know, lunar eclipses are when the moon appears darkened as opposed to the sun. It happens when the Earth is between the sun and the moon. These eclipses happen a lot more often than solar ones, and Blue Jacket's people were particularly impacted by this lunar eclipse because it was foretold by a prophecy.
So, what did the lunar eclipse mean to them?
The eclipse was an omen of war, but Blue Jacket also saw it as a sign of a threat to the unity of the Native American coalition that his people were a part of. The prophecy said that, quote, the Manitou did not want to see the bloody tomahawk among his children, end quote. This is from Catalano's paper. And that the Great Spirit would, quote, hide his face in a cloud if they refused to talk to their white chief, end quote.
So I'm guessing the white chief is General Anthony Wayne.
Right, yeah. So as Catalano says, the Shawnee warriors were going through ritual fasting after the eclipse, so they were pretty weak at that point.
We don't have a direct documentation of this particular eclipse of how they responded. So we're sort of piecing together the sort of pattern of responses over time. We do have more detailed descriptions of how this Indian coalition responded to the weather events that immediately followed. So it's not entirely certain how this particular eclipse affected them from written documentation. We just don't have that. We do know from looking at the weather patterns that it would have been visible that the rains that had been in the area at the time sort of parted. So this would have been something they would have seen. Likely they had discussions about this. It may have even triggered the start of the fasting rituals, which sometimes included like a ritual vomiting and things. So that was a substantial thing for them to embark on.
There's a pretty significant power dynamic there, right? Wayne's white soldiers aren't going through this ritual fasting and dealing with the psychological implications of this prophecy, and along with the blocks that come with it, with being told that they're going to lose this war.
Yeah, so how did this affect Wayne's plans?
Catalano says that it's entirely possible that Wayne purposely delayed his advance on the Shawnee because he may have had some knowledge of the rituals. The Battle of Fallen Timbers, which took place a week after the lunar eclipse, was a clear victory for Wayne.
What does this tell us about the power dynamic between the white colonists and the Shawnee people?
Well, there's a couple of things. There's this idea that the spirituality of the Native Americans was used against them in battle, as shown by Wayne's delay of his advancement until the Shawnee warriors were too weak from hunger to truly fight to their full potential. It also shows how important the customs of the Shawnee were to them, as well as their beliefs. The power of the Great Spirit and that of the lunar eclipse told Blue Jacket that he was not going to win this battle, and the prophecy came true. Whether this was doomed from the beginning because of a prophecy, or if the prophecy itself led to the warriors becoming weaker as they fasted, is a moot point in this case. Like, it doesn't really matter, because it can be argued in circles all day. But what's important is that the Native Americans believed in the power of the eclipse so much that they were ultimately defeated.
As we draw this episode to a close, we reflect on the profound impact eclipses have had on history, culture, and the shifting sands of power dynamics. Like we stated earlier, for most people today, eclipses are a curiosity, an excuse to party. But historically, and as recently as the early 20th century, they were fate-changing events. These celestial events have been far more than mere marvels in the sky. They have been omens of change and symbols of belief. Join us next time as we journey beyond superstition. We will explore how eclipses and other celestial occurrences transitioned from the mystical to the mundane, from omens to science.
We'll delve into the evolution of thought that saw humanity lift the veils of superstition to gaze upon the cosmos with a new understanding, grounded in science, yet still reaching for the profound.
Together, we'll unravel how astronomy has shed light on the unknown and how our ancestors' superstition have shaped and continue to influence our modern-day perspective of the universe.
Thank you for listening to Eclipsing History.
This episode was designed and recorded by Nick Bowers, Alex Eckhart, Timmy Fatoki, and Maggie Fuller, students of the Public History Program at Bowling Green State University, under the direction of Cheryl Dunn and Amilcar Chalou. Mid-Story mixed and edited the episode. We thank our interviewees, Josh Catalano, George Ironstrad, Tim O'Grady, Randall Rosenfeld, and Talon Silver.
Brandon Cena composed the original music for the podcast. Ohio Humanities provided financial support. To access other episodes and additional content, please go to bgsu.edu/eclipsinghistory.